Amazon, Netflix, Google Books, Google Scholar, Google, 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 Google. I can get everything I want on the internet. Who really needs libraries anymore? How many of you believe that there will be libraries in 10 years? 20? Oh, some hands went down. The problem is that libraries no longer have the corner on the information market. We aren't the only repositories of wisdom available to our communities. We really can get almost anything we want on the internet. Almost. But it isn't a replacement for the library. It's an incredibly rich information resource, and it's a delivery platform for the conveyance of information and for communication. But the internet is not a library. I think libraries will endure, the institution and the physical space, and here's why. Where else can I go where there are other people, safe people, but I don't necessarily have to interact with them? I can be alone without being lonely. I don't have to be a member. I don't have to pay a cover charge. I don't even have to buy a drink. If I want to be alone, I can be social without having to sign up with eHarmony.com. And there's more. In the library, I can also have an adventure, be enlightened, nap, learn, dabble. I can email, observe, explore, query, write my resume, pretend, come to an understanding. I can browse, wonder, argue, investigate, watch people, stare into space, do crossword puzzles. I can write reports, play games, I am, gossip, do homework, daydream. I can apply for a job, blog, select prescription drug plans, or find out what's going on in town tonight. I can update my MySpace, Facebook, Flickr, or LinkedIn pages. I can check out the international news, work on my novel, download government reports. I can worry about global warming, find a group to join, or play Dance Dance Revolution. I can worry about I can meet a friend for a cup of coffee, verify facts, or play chess. Oh, and I can also read a book. Where else do I have the option to do all of these things? There is no place else. Libraries provide something unique. It's hard to put your finger on exactly what that thing is, but there's several ways that people have described libraries, and I'll just share them with you. Repositories for the work of independent scholars, free agent teachers, and independent self-directed learners. Kind of a mouthful. A living room for the neighborhood. America's front porch. The center of the community. The People's Research and Development Department. A refuge and sanctuary. Ornate temples for self-improvement. A place that links education and entertainment. A symbolic space, a type of collection, a kind of building that gives institutional form to our collective memory. A social instrument created to form a link in the communication system that is essential to any society or culture. The library is a place where things come together in new and interesting ways, where something new becomes possible just because of that coming together. The word synapse, finally we're getting to the title of the presentation, comes from the Greek word synaption, which means to clasp together. So the synaptic library, and the reason for this title, is that the library is a place that brings things together. But it's more than just bringing together. It's what can happen from the clasping. When I talk about the synaptic library, I'm referring to synapses like those that occur in our brains. And now I'm going to go into a whole explanation of neurons, so follow me here. Neurons are brain cells. Synapses are the small gaps between the neurons. Joseph Ledoux, professor of science at NYU's Center for Neuroscience, explains that synapses are the channel of communication between brain cells and the means by which most of what the brain does is accomplished. It turns out that the way neurons work is exactly how libraries work. Neurons are composed of two parts, the cell body and the nerves. Nerves are fibers that extend out of the cell body, and nerves can be input channels, dendrites, or output channels, axons. When neurons are excited, they send electrical impulses from their cell bodies down through their axons. The electricity creates an action potential. For the dendrites of the nearby neuron to pick up on that excitement, the action potential must be met because this causes a chemical to be released, the neurotransmitter. The released chemical floats across that synaptic space between axon and dendrite so that the message can get through. This communication is critical because it takes a bunch of neurons working together to get much of anything done. These neurons work together forming circuits to create an action. In the case of our brains, this process might cause me to move my leg, remember the author of a book, or recognize that taste as butterscotch. So the image of the synaptic library is this. Signals pass through the neuron. Maybe the action potential is reached. Enough energy is created that the neurochemicals are released, and the energy leaps across that synaptic space, creating yet more energy. Circuits of coordinated neurons are built. They flash and whir, and something happens. Ideas, action, transformation. Every time someone walks through the library door, there is potential for action. The question is whether there's enough energy to get across the synapse. The difference between the internet and the library is that there are many more opportunities for making the synaptic leap. How many of you have literacy programs in your library? Really? You must have more than that. Really? Learning to read has to be one of the most incredible synaptic explosions possible. Think of the world that becomes available to an adult that learns to read. One day you can't fill out forms for the job, for a job, and another day you're reading The Old Man and the Sea. That's not just potential, that's life-changing. Does anyone have senior citizens in their library? How many seniors come into the library to use the public computers? A few? They don't use computers at home for any number of reasons. I can't afford one. My computer at home doesn't connect to the internet. My AOL doesn't work anymore. I had a computer once, but it just gave out. The reason many of these people come into the library to use the computers is because of the support they get. The library provides the critical impetus needed to make that synaptic leap. With the library's resources, machine and human, these people make contact with news, entertainment, and communication tools that they would otherwise not have access to. I understand some old geezers come in and check out some of the, shall we say, unsavory websites each morning. Well, hey, excitement, incentive to live another day. How many seniors use library computers to check their finances? Email old friends. Email with new friends, friends who are just too far away to visit anymore. Maybe they're even finding new partners online. You can use eharmony.com at the library if you want to. Our libraries have given many of these people a critical lifeline. It's not just the internet access. It's the place and it's the people that make the difference. When I get older, I plan to hang out a lot at the library, find a nice spot where I can return each day, become a regular. People will know me, I'll read the local paper, have a cup of coffee. By then, I'm sure it'll be decaf. I might wander over to where the kids are and see just what these little buggers are up to these days. Since it's my library, I can stay there as long as I like. It's a safe place. Sometimes I like to listen to those audiobooks because my eyes just aren't what they used to be. It's a nice place and I can come and go as I please. What about immigrants and new Americans? Depending on the country you're from, the mere idea of a free public library could be transformative. Books in my native language as well as in English? Free classes where I can speak English? And I can bring my kids? Libraries provide communities that they can use and learn to use. There are even computers available in their native language. How many immigrants have applied for green cards in the library? Do you suppose that transforms? Library spaces can offer a respite from an overcrowded apartment with too many young men or large extended families. The library provides a place to take some time for themselves. Libraries allow new arrivals to see the best of America. Why do you suppose people who never visited a library start coming when they have a child. Or perhaps they started coming when they first realized they were going to have a child. How exactly does this childbirth thing work? Do I really have to give up wine during my pregnancy? Oh my gosh, when she's born, how am I going to keep my baby alive? These are questions that may be answered in Google, but isn't it nicer to go to the library where I can look through the pregnancy books and maybe meet other moms-to-be? It's about the connection, bridging the chasms between us. It's happening at the library. Story time is all about parents finding other parents with kids the same age and kids being able to interact with other kids, finally. No, you are not the only one-year-old on planet Earth. Look, there's another one now. Kids crowd into the library every day after school. Does that happen here? Anyway, happens in California. They bounce off each other like little molecules. They do homework together. They IM each other, possibly from one library computer to another, 2 feet away. They play games that involve planning and quick thinking, typing skills, manual dexterity. They create MySpace pages that are expressions of themselves. They interact with their peers. They hang out with their first best friend. They test out who they are. They work on homework assignments in little gangs. They paw through the graphic novels and discuss the relative merits of each book. Who's sick? Who's whack? They compare notes about how to advance to the next level and on Myst Online or evaluate complex strategies in Destroyer. You're all familiar with the excitement, sometimes frenetic excitement, associated with kids in the library. But the sound of that fury is the synapses. You think it is the loud, screeching voices of undisciplined children? No. This is how learning happens. These kids are much more communicative, interactive, and technically savvy than we were at their age. They are preparing for a future that we can't even imagine. They are creating it right now. They are the digital natives. We are the digital immigrants. Their circuitry is already radically different from ours. They've never known a world without computers. Some have never known a world without cell phones and texting. They are accustomed to massive quantities of information accosting them. They multitask automatically. They communicate constantly, and they think for themselves. They're not big on authority for authority's sake, and they believe most anything is possible, accessible, and doable. Let's go back to my brain metaphor. These synapses in our brains get hard-coded with use, and they work together in circuits. But also, adjacencies matter. So as we age, we build these patterns in our brains where the circuitry is laid down and works quite well. These circuits are building blocks, and they affect one another. Those kids are building the circuitry that they'll be counting on in high school and college. The socializing, the game playing, it all makes sense for what they need to do at their age. What's new is that so much of it is happening on computers, online, and on phones. The good news is that it is happening at our libraries. The fact that libraries are creating teen spaces that really are for teens is creating a positive association for those kids. The library is one of their friends on MySpace. They participate in the reading club on the library teen page. They do homework at the library. They are buzzing about, having fun, disrupting other patrons, figuring out who they are, establishing relationships with each other, making noise, developing confidence, finding out that learning can be a blast. What else is happening? All of that excitement is associated with the library. The circuitry associated with choosing the library as a destination or resource and these other positive experiences that happen in relation to the library bleed over on each other. It's that adjacency thing. Many older people, my age, have reported that they have anxious feelings about the library. I, for one, still have to go to the bathroom every time I walk into a bookstore from my early days in the library. People are afraid of looking stupid. Got to be quiet. The whole shush thing. Not these kids. These kids are going to have fantastic associations with the library. It will always be a place they feel good about coming to. The truth is that the books are a relatively minor part of what makes a library so special. true. You can't take all the books out of the library and still have a library, but we could reduce the numbers of them available for browsing, and the library could still be that front porch, that place that links entertainment and education. It could still ensure that the critical connections are being made between people and between people and library resources. In fact, technology is creating many new opportunities for us to breach the synaptic divide and help people make transformative connections. For a large part of my life, I expected to grow up to be a reference librarian. At various points, I considered other careers. I was at one period going to sail the Calypso with Jacques Cousteau. I considered brain surgery. Child development and child psychiatry sounded good after I read Dibbs In Search of Self. A lawyer, of course, famous documentary filmmaker, but reference librarian has always kind of stuck in the back of my mind as the ideal career. People would come in, I would have the answers. At any rate, I love reference service. I remember when I learned that you could call the library and ask them to tell you the population of Switzerland, the diameter of Saturn without the moons, or the inflation rate. And they do it, seriously. I mean, it just seems so incredible. A reference librarian showed me the Reader's Guide to Periodical Literature when I was working on my first term paper. Are you kidding me? I was sure that was cheating. Considering the state of my hormones, I'm guessing that I was 13 when I found Bartlett's Familiar Quotes. Anybody like that? Take any word, find a heart-wrenching poem. Friendship, jealousy, love. They know me so well. I could have written that. So my experience of reference was in the library, the physical space. Clearly, those positive associations got laid down in my brain. I associate libraries with wonder, cheating, knowledge. Yeah, cheating from using those great reference books. But now people can have some of the huge experiences I've had without coming to the library. People can IM the library, instant message, and ask questions. They don't have to say to the reference librarian, my aunt thinks she might have genital herpes and wants to know the symptoms. Can you help me, her? With IM, it can be completely private. With some of the shared IM services, like 24/7, libraries can be available all night and all day without having to pay anyone overtime. With software like Mevo, the library can put a chat box on their webpage, and the patron doesn't even have to have AIM or MSN chat or any other software. They can just type in their question on the library webpage. So many hurdles are gone now because of technology. Hurdles of geography, time, access, technical savvy, embarrassment. More people can now connect to the library than ever before. I read a story about a university library that found offering text messaging reference services improved the academic work of their libraries, of their athletes. They said that some of the prime schoolwork opportunities for athletes were late at night when the library was closed, and sometimes they couldn't even get on the internet to find resources. Those times, like when you're soaking a sore body part in the training room, or traveling to and from the games or competitions, tournaments, matches, or late at night when you're on the road. When they could get the help they needed via their phone, they were able to do more substantive work. They weren't cut off from the resources. The cell phone made the connection to the library. The cell phone plus the library got them over that synapse, and they began doing better in school. They weren't just dumb jocks after all. Neuron, zap, zing. I'm a big fan of all kinds of automation. I am a library technology consultant after all. Let's talk about automated retrieval systems. You wanted to talk about automated retrieval systems, right? Books stored in compact shelving in the basement somewhere. Robotic pickers retrieve the books when they are requested. Access time, 5 minutes. Big technology. Big benefits for the synaptic library. Here's my convoluted explanation. Are you familiar with the long tail. For those of you who may not be, the long tail refers to the power curve, and a power curve is shaped like this. So it's got the big head here, and it's got the long tail that stretches out the axis approaching zero. Blockbuster and Walmart service the head of that power curve. They stock items that the masses want. They stock many, many copies of the things that the masses want because the masses come there to find their massively popular things. Netflix, on the other hand, has made a successful business servicing not the head, but the long tail. They've taken advantage of the aggregating power of the internet to provide the niche or boutique items that only a few people want in any geographic location anyway. So while Blockbuster might not bother carrying the ooze, Netflix just might. Do you know the ooze? The movie? Slumber Party, oozy monster thing comes in through the cracks, gets the girls. Anyway, Netflix might carry the ooze because nationwide there are enough of us formerly teenage girls that were strongly influenced by the ooze who wish to watch it again. Or in my case, a therapist who insists that I watch it again. But anyway, the point is that unlike Blockbusters and Netflix, who each service only one end or the other of that curve, libraries are trying to serve both. Libraries keep the Blockbusters, as well as the little-known treasures. Now, I'm sorry I used the ooze as my example. Libraries are trying to be the Barnes & Noble and the A. Libris, the rare bookstore, all at once. We've got 80 copies of that latest Harry Potter, but don't worry, we also have all issues of the Lancaster Eagle Gazette dating back from 1807. The problem is that it is important for public libraries to continue servicing both ends of the spectrum. We don't want to toss out the old issues of the Lancaster Eagle Gazette, at least not until we digitize and index them. But we also need those popular items. The answer is to start using space more efficiently and more creatively. Compact shelving allows us to keep all those seldom used nuggets, the local history, while making room for the high circulating items that keep the doors of the library going around. The cost of housing an item on a publicly accessible shelf is enormous when compared to the cost of one of these systems, even after you factor in the cost of the robot for the automatic retrieval. It's at least twice as costly to shelve items in public spaces. The University of Chicago recently evaluated options for their 3.5 million volumes and determined that it would cost $67 million to build browsable compact shelving for all of them. For $36 million, half, they could build an on-campus compact storage automated retrieval system. The University of Utah put a system in. They compared the cost of construction for these two options. $20 per item, per book, to store a book in a publicly accessible area. $4 per book for items stored in compact shelving. The high-tech solution provides the best of all worlds. Even though the items are not browsable, they are retrievable within 5 minutes. This, of course, is a key component. The access, the easy and quick access. You can't find a book on the shelves yourself in 5 minutes. Well, maybe you can. But a university found that it was taking some of their students as long as 30 minutes to locate items on the shelves. I'd like to see more libraries move in this direction of the compact shelving. Less work for patrons, which is good. Less work for library staff, also good. And more space for non-book things. Incredible library spaces are being created for a wide variety of users. And while the books provide much of what is appealing about those spaces, it's no longer all about the book. Technology like these compact shelving systems allow communities to build libraries that keep them relevant. They can continue to serve as the collective memory of the community by keeping historical local collections, and they can also serve the community's desire for popular current material. And they can do other fantastic things in the extra library space they've got. You especially see the opportunities for using library space in new library buildings. They're being built with these fabulous kids' spaces with bright, fun colors, big, fluffy, chair-like things, whimsical doodads hanging from the ceiling. Click-free zones. Do you guys have click-free zones out here? You know what I mean by that? They're like these reverent reading spaces with lots of oak and chairs perfectly positioned to enjoy the morning sun coming in and the library windows. And no one is there clicking on a computer, texting on their phone, and certainly not talking on their phone. New libraries are also built for convenience. Convenience that makes sense for today. Easy access to the holds pickup with easy access to the self-checkout terminals. And the hot picks or just released items are prominently featured near the self-check machine so I can grab an extra book or two just because it looks so enticing. Grab and go. And I don't have to worry about hitting any limits because I just checked in 10 books using the conveniently placed self-check-in book drop on the way in. Instead of the old library full of rules and rigmarole, today's library is convenient. And it creates opportunities for discovery in new ways. Browsing shelves used to be the primary opportunity for having unexpected surprises. You'd go down the shelves and look at the covers and find new and interesting things. Now it can happen just a few feet inside the library. Just returned shelves near self-checkout machines. Oh, there's the book I've been hearing about. Let me grab that too. Wayne Pearson of the Cerritos Library in California built a library he christened the Experience Library. Has anyone heard of it? No? The public library features a life-size dinosaur, a very large shark tank, I don't know how many gallons, an old world room and other theme rooms, and lots of study rooms for kids and about 150 public computers. He recognized that the library was about creating an experience, creating opportunities to get those synapses firing one way or another. How about the Seattle Library? You heard of that? Quite an experience. Has anybody been there? I know one person has. I haven't been there yet, but I'm very eager to go. But with today's technology provides us with many new ways to create connections, to build excitement, to create opportunities. How many of you have blogs for your library? A few. Maybe you have them and you don't even know it. Is that possible? RSS feeds of newly acquired books or DVD? Some libraries are offering customizable feeds. I'd like to get new acquisitions, mysteries only, please. Wikis are a great tool for librarians to work together to build excellent online subject guides. I know one library that has a very dynamic subject guide. The librarians are updating them daily. Everybody can participate on wikis. They're adding new links all the time. But even better is that they use the comments feature of the wiki to get feedback from their library patrons. Patrons can comment on what they've got up there and ask for new material. Hey, how about a resource guide on Albania? I understand they love George Bush there, and I just don't understand why. So many of these 2.0 technologies allow the patrons to determine what the library is, and why not? It is their library, after all. Libraries are about bringing new things together, bridging a chasm by creating connections, energy, communication, and community. The connections may be between people, between library resources, books, DVDs, databases, maps, local history collections, magazines, newspapers, games, and the people who use them. The people may be online or they may be in the physical library space. Regardless of where they are, the people who build, manage, and staff our libraries need to get it that the libraries are still critical. Libraries are one of the few potential points of connection still available between us. The question is simply, can we create enough excitement in our libraries to bridge that synapse and make something happen? I, of course, think we can. Thank you very much.